driveway to the farmhouse. The sheriff's man? Someone driving their father home? Shit. They're gonna make my truck in 2 seconds. Zack pushed them toward the forest, using the shotgun like a cattle prod to make them walk faster.
Y'all keep moving or I'll shoot you right here.
Right here. Charlie stiffened at the words. Her teeth started to chatter again. She had finally made the connection. She understood that they were walking to their deaths. Sam said, "There's another way out of this." She was talking to Hightop, but Zack was the one who snorted. Sam said, "I'll do whatever you want." She heard Gamma's voice speaking the words alongside her. "Anything."
"Shit," Zack said. "You don't think I'm gonna take what I want anyways, you stupid bitch?"
Sam tried again. "We won't tell them it was you. We'll say you had your masks on the entire time and..."
"With my truck in the driveway and your mama dead in the house?"
Zack huffed a snort.
"Y'all Quinns think you're so fucking smart can talk your way out of anything."
"Listen to me," Sam begged. "You've got to leave town anyway. There's no reason to kill us, too." She turned her head toward Hightop. "Please, just think about it. All you have to do is tie us up. Leave us somewhere they won't find us. You're going to have to leave town either way. You don't want more blood on your hands." Sam waited for a response. They all waited. Hightop cleared his throat before finally saying,
"I'm sorry."
Zack's laughter had an edge of triumph. Sam couldn't give up. "Let my sister go." She had to stop speaking for a moment so she could swallow the saliva in her mouth. "She's 13. Just a kid."
"Don't look like no kid to me," Zack said. "Got them nice high titties."
"Shut up,"
Hightop warned.
"I mean it."
Zack made a sucking noise with his teeth. "She won't tell anyone." Sam had to keep trying. "She'll say it was strangers, won't you, Charlie?"
"Black fella?" Zack asked. "Like the one your daddy got off from murder?"
Charlie spat out, "You mean like he got you off for showing your wiener to a bunch of little girls?" "Charlie," Sam begged, "please be quiet."
"Let her speak," Zack said. "I like it when they got a little fight in them."
Charlie went quiet. She stayed silent as they headed into the woods. Sam followed closely, racking her brain for an appeal that would persuade the gunmen that they didn't have to do this. But Zack Culpepper was right. His truck back at the house changed everything. "No," Charlie whispered to herself. She did this all of the time, vocalizing an argument she was having in her head. "Please run," Sam silently begged. "It's okay to go without me."
"Move."
Zack shoved the shotgun into her back until Sam walked faster. Pine needles dug into her feet. They were going deeper into the forest. The air got cooler. Sam closed her eyes because it was pointless trying to see. She let Charlie guide her through the woods. Leaves rustled. They stepped over fallen trees, walked into a narrow stream that was probably runoff from the farm to the creek. "Run, run, run," Sam silently prayed to Charlie in her head. "Please run." "Sam?" Charlie stopped walking. Her arm gripped Sam around the waist. "There's a shovel. A shovel." Sam didn't understand. She touched her fingers to her eyelids. Dried blood had caked them shut. She pushed, gently, coaxing open her eyes. Soft moonlight cast a blue glow on the clearing in front of them. There was more than a shovel. A mound of freshly turned earth was piled beside an open hole in the ground. One hole. One grave. Her vision tunneled on the gaping black void as everything came into focus. This wasn't a burglary, or an attempt to intimidate away a bunch of legal bills. Everyone knew that the house burning down had put the Quinns in dire financial straits. The fight with the insurance company, the eviction from the hotel, the thrift store purchases. Zachariah Culpepper had obviously assumed that Rusty was going to replenish his bank account by forcing non-paying clients to settle their bills. He wasn't that far off. Gamma had screamed at Rusty the other night about how the $20,000 Culpepper owed them would go a long way toward making the family solvent again. Which meant that all of this boiled down to money. And worse, stupidity, because the outstanding bills would not have died with her father. Sam felt the reverberations of her earlier rage. She bit her tongue so hard that blood seeped into her mouth. There was a reason Zachariah Culpepper was a lifelong con. As with all of his crimes, the plan was a bad one, poorly executed. Every single blunder had led them to this place. They had dug a grave for Rusty. But since Rusty was late, because he was always late, and since today was the one day they had been allowed to skip track practice, now it was meant for Charlie and Sam.
All right, big boy, time for you to do your part.
Zach rested the butt of the shotgun on his hip. He pulled a switchblade out of his pocket and slapped it open with one hand.
The guns will be too loud. Take this.
Right across the throat like you'd do with a pig.
Hightop did not take the knife.
Zach said, Come on, like we agreed. You do her, I'll take care of the little one.
Hightop still did not move.
She's right. We don't have to do this. The plan wasn't ever to hurt the women. They weren't even supposed to be here.
Say what now?
Sam grabbed Charlie's hand. They were distracted. She could run. Hightop said,
What's done is done. We don't have to make it worse by killing more people. Innocent people.
Jesus Christ.
Zach closed the knife and shoved it back into his pocket.
We went over this in the kitchen, man. Ain't like we got a choice. We can turn ourselves in.
Zach gripped the shotgun.
Bullshit. I'll turn myself in. I'll take the blame for everything.
Sam pushed against Charlie, letting her know it was time to move. Charlie didn't move. She held tight.
The hell you will.
Zach thumped Hightop in the chest.
You think I'm gonna go down on a murder charge 'cause you grew a fucking conscience?
Sam let go of her sister's hand. She whispered, Charlie, run.
I won't tell, Hightop said. I'll say it was me. In my goddamn truck.
Charlie tried to take Sam's hand again. Sam pulled away, whispering, Go.
Motherfucker.
Zach raised the shotgun, pointing it at Hightop's chest.
This is what's gonna happen, son. You're gonna take my knife and you're gonna slice open that bitch's throat, or I will blow a hole in your chest the size of Texas.
He stamped his foot.
Right now.
Hightop slung up the revolver, pointing it at Zach's head.
We're gonna turn ourselves in. Get that fucking gun out of my face, you pansy-ass piece of shit.
Sam nudged Charlie. She had to move. She had to get out of here. There would only be one chance. She practically begged her sister. Go! Hightop said,
I'll kill you before I kill them. You ain't got the balls to pull that trigger. I'll do it.
Charlie still wouldn't budge. Her teeth were chattering again. Run! Sam pleaded. You have to run!
Rich boy, piece of shit.
Zach spat on the ground. He went to wipe his mouth, but only as a distraction. He reached out for the revolver. Hightop had anticipated the move. He backhanded the shotgun. Zach was thrown off balance. He couldn't keep his footing. He fell back, arms flailing.
Run!
Sam shoved her sister away. Charlie, go! Charlie turned into a blur of motion. Sam started to follow, leg raised, arm bent. Another explosion. A flash of light from the revolver. A sudden vibration in the air. Sam's head jerked so violently that her neck cracked. Her body followed in a wild twist. She spun like a top, falling into darkness the same way Alice fell into the rabbit hole. "Do you know how pretty you are?" Sam's feet hit the ground. She felt her knees absorb the shock. She looked down. Her toes were spread flat against a water-soaked hardwood floor. She looked up to find her reflection staring back from a mirror. Inexplicably, Sam was at the farmhouse, standing at the bathroom sink. Gamma stood behind her, strong arms wrapped around Sam's waist. Her mother looked younger, softer in the mirror. Her eyebrow was arched up as if she'd heard something dubious. This was the woman who'd explained the difference between fission and fusion to a stranger at the grocery store, who devised complicated scavenger hunts that took up all of their Easters. What were the clues now? "Tell me," Sam asked her mother's reflection. "Tell me what you want me to do." Gamma's mouth opened, but she did not speak. Her face began to age. Sam felt a longing for the mother she would never see grow old. Fine lines spread out from Gamma's mouth, crow's feet around her eyes. The wrinkles deepened. Streaks of gray salted her dark hair. Her jawline grew fuller. Her skin began to peel away. White teeth showed through an open hole in her cheek. Her hair turned into greasy white twine. Her eyes grew desiccated. She wasn't aging. She was decomposing. Sam struggled to get away. The smell of death enveloped her, wet earth, fresh maggots burrowing underneath her skin. Gamma's hands clamped around her face. She made Sam turn around. Fingers reduced to dry bone. Black teeth honed into razor blades as Gamma opened her mouth and screamed, "I told you to get out!" Sam gasped awake. Her eyes slid open onto an impenetrable blackness. Dirt filled her mouth. Wet soil. Pine needles. Her hands were in front of her face. Hot breath bounced against her palms. There was a sound. Shh, 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 shh. A broom sweeping. An axe swinging. A shovel dropping dirt into a grave. Sam's grave. She was being buried alive. The weight of the soil on top of her was like a metal plate.
"I'm sorry."
Hightop's voice caught around the words.
"Please, God. Please forgive me."
The dirt kept coming, the weight turning into a vice that threatened to press the breath right out of her. "Did you know that Giles Corey was the only defendant in the Salem witch trials who was pressed to death?" Tears filled Sam's eyes, slid down her face. A scream got trapped inside her throat. She couldn't panic. She couldn't start yelling or flailing because they would not help her. They would shoot her again. Begging for her life would only speed up the taking of her life. "Don't be silly," Gamma said. "I thought you were past that teenager stage." Sam inhaled a shaky breath. She startled as she realized that air was entering her lungs. She could breathe. Her hands were cupped to her face, creating an air pocket inside the dirt. Sam tightened the seal between her palms. She forced her breaths to slow in order to preserve what precious air she had left. Charlie had told her to do this. Years ago. Sam could picture her sister in her brownie uniform, arms and legs like tiny sticks, her creased yellow shirt and brown vest with all the patches she had earned. She had read aloud from her adventure handbook at the breakfast table. "If you find yourself caught in an avalanche, do not cry out or open your mouth," Charlie had read. "Put your hands in front of your face and try to create an airspace as you are coming to a stop." Sam stuck out her tongue, trying to see how far away her hands were. She guessed a quarter of an inch. She flexed her fingers, trying to elongate the pocket of air. There was nothing to move into. The dirt was packed tightly around her hands, almost like cement. She tried to glean the position of her body. She wasn't flat on her back. Her left shoulder was pressed to the ground, but she wasn't fully lying on her side either. Her hips were turned at an angle to her shoulders. Cold seeped into the back of her running shorts. Her right knee was bent. Her left leg was straight. Torso twist. A runner stretch. Her body had fallen into a familiar position. Sam tried to shift her weight. She couldn't move her legs. She tried her toes, her calf muscles, her hamstrings. Nothing. Sam closed her eyes. She was paralyzed. She would never walk again, run again, move again without assistance. Panic rushed into her chest like a swarm of mosquitoes. Running was all that she had. It was who she was. What was the point of trying to survive if she could never use her legs again? She pressed her face into her hands so that she wouldn't cry out. Charlie could still run. Sam had watched her sister bolt toward the forest. It was the last thing she'd seen before the revolver went off. Sam conjured into her mind the image of Charlie sprinting, her spindly legs moving impossibly fast as she flew forward, away, never hesitating, never stopping to look back. "Don't think about me," Sam begged. The same thing she had told her sister a million times before. "Just concentrate on yourself and keep running." Had Charlie made it? Had she found help? Or had she looked over her shoulder to see if Sam was following and instead found Zachariah Culpepper's shotgun jammed into her face? Or worse. Sam forced the thought from her mind. She saw Charlie running free, getting help, bringing the police back to the grave because she had her mother's sense of direction and she never got lost, and she would remember where her sister was buried. Sam counted out the beats of her heart until she felt them slow to a less frantic pace. And then she felt a tickle in her throat. Everything was filled with dirt, her ears, nose, mouth, lungs. She couldn't stop the cough that wanted to come out of her mouth. Her lips opened, the reflexive intake of air pulled more dirt into her nose. She coughed again, then again. The third time was so hard that she felt her stomach cramp and her body strain to pull herself into a ball. Sam felt a jolt in her heart. Her legs had twitched. Panic and fear had cut off the vital connections between her brain and her musculature. She had not been paralyzed. She had been terrified. Some ancient fight-or-flight mechanism pushing her out of her own body until she could understand what was happening. Sam felt elation as sensation slowly returned to her lower body. It was as if she was walking into a pool of water. At first, she could feel her toes spreading through the thick earth. Then her ankles were able to bend. Then she felt the tiniest amount of movement in her ankles. If she could move her feet, what else could she move? Sam flexed her calves, warming them up. Her quads started to fire, her knees tensed. She concentrated on her legs, telling herself that they could move until her body sent back the message that, yes, her legs could move. She was not paralyzed. She had a chance. Gamma always said that Sam had learned how to run before she'd learned how to walk. Her legs were the strongest part of her body. She could kick her way out. Sam worked her legs, making infinitesimal motions back and forth, trying to burrow through the heavy layer of dirt. Her breath grew hot in her hands. A dense fog clouded out the panic in her brain. Was she using up too much air? Did it matter? She kept losing track of what she was doing. Her lower body was moving back and forth, and sometimes she found herself thinking she was lying on the deck of a tiny boat, rocking on the ocean. And then she would come to, would realize that she was trapped underground and struggle to move faster, harder, only to be lulled back onto the boat again. She tried to count. 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi. Her legs cramped. Her stomach cramped. Everything cramped. Sam made herself stop, if only for a few seconds. The rest was almost as painful as the effort. Lactic acid boiled off her spent muscles, causing her stomach to churn. Her vertebrae had twisted into over-tightened bolts that pinched the nerves and shot an electric pain into her neck and legs. Every breath was caught in her hands like a trapped bird.
"There is a 50% chance of survival," Charlie had read from her adventure book, "but only if the victim is found within 1 hour."
Sam didn't know how long she'd been in the grave. Like losing the red brick house, like watching her mother die, that had been a lifetime ago. She tightened her stomach muscles and tried a sideways push-up. Her arm tensed, her neck strained. The earth pressed back, grinding her shoulder into the wet soil. She needed more room. Sam tried to rock her hips. There was an inch of space at first, then 2 inches. Then she could move her waist, her shoulder, her neck, her head. Was there suddenly more space between her mouth and her hands? Sam stuck out her tongue again. She felt the tip brush against the gap between her 2 palms. That was 1/2 inch at least. Progress. She worked on her arms next, shifting them up and down, up and down. There were no inches this time. Centimeters, then millimeters of dirt shifted. She had to keep her hands in front of her face so she could breathe, but then she realized that she had to dig with her hands. 1 hour. That was all Charlie had given her. Sam's time had to be running out. Her palms were hot, bathed in condensation. Her brain was awash in dizziness. Sam took a last, deep breath. She pushed her hands away from her face. Her wrists felt like they were going to break as she twisted her hands around. She pressed together her lips, gritted her teeth, and clawed at the ground, furiously trying to dislodge the dirt. And still the earth pushed back. Her shoulders ignited in pain. Trapezoids, rhomboids, scapula. Hot irons pierced her biceps. Her fingers felt like they were going to snap. Her nails chipped off. The skin on her knuckles peeled away. Her lungs were going to collapse. She couldn't keep holding her breath. She couldn't keep fighting. She was tired. She was alone. Her mother was dead. Her sister was gone. Sam started to yell. First in her head, then through her mouth. She was so angry, furious at her mother for grabbing the shotgun, livid with her father for bringing this hell to their doorstep, pissed at Charlie for not being stronger, and fucking apoplectic that she was going to die in this goddamn grave. Shallow grave. Cool air wrapped around her fingers. She had broken through the soil. Less than 2 feet separated Sam from life and death. There was no time to rejoice. She had no air in her lungs, no hope unless she could keep digging. She flicked away debris with her fingers. Leaves, pine cones. Her murderer had tried to hide the freshly dug earth, but he hadn't counted on the girl inside climbing her way out. She grabbed a handful of dirt, then another, then kept going until she was able to clench her abdominal muscles one last time and leverage herself up. Sam gagged on the sudden rush of fresh air. She spat out dirt and blood. Her hair was matted. She touched her fingers to the side of her scalp. Her pinky slipped into a tiny hole. The bone was smooth inside the circle. This was where the bullet had gone in. She had been shot in the head. She had been shot in the head. Sam took away her hand. She dared not wipe her eyes. She squinted into the distance. The forest was a blur. She saw 2 fat dots of light floating like lazy bumblebees in front of her face. She heard the trickling of water, echoing, like through an access tunnel that snaked underneath a weather tower and led to a paved road. Another pair of lights floated by. Not bumblebees. Headlights.
Chapter 1 28 Years Later. Charlie Quinn walked through the darkened halls of Pikeville Middle School with a gnawing sense of trepidation. This wasn't an early morning walk of shame. This was a walk of deeply held regret. Fitting, since the first time she'd had sex with a boy she shouldn't have had sex with was inside this very building. The gymnasium, to be exact, which just went to show that her father had been right about the perils of a late curfew. She gripped the cell phone in her hand as she turned a corner. The wrong boy. The wrong man. The wrong phone. The wrong way, because she didn't know where the hell she was going. Charlie turned around and retraced her steps. Everything in this stupid building looked familiar, but nothing was where she remembered it was supposed to be. She took a left and found herself standing outside the front office. Empty chairs were waiting for the bad students who would be sent to the principal. The plastic seats looked similar to the ones in which Charlie had whiled away her early years. Talking back, mouthing off, arguing with teachers, fellow students, inanimate objects. Her adult self would have slapped her teenage self for being such a pain in the ass. She cupped her hand to the window and peered inside the dark office. Finally, something that looked how it was supposed to look. The high counter where Mrs. Jenkins, the school secretary, had held court. Pennants drooping from the water-stained ceiling. Student artwork taped to the walls. A lone light was on in the back. Charlie wasn't about to ask Principal Pinkman for directions to her booty call. Not that this was a booty call. It was more of a, "Hey, girl, you picked up the wrong iPhone after I nailed you in my truck at Shady Rays last night," call. There was no point in Charlie asking herself what she had been thinking, because you didn't go to a bar named Shady Rays to think. The phone in her hand rang. Charlie saw the unfamiliar screensaver of a German Shepherd with a Kong toy in its mouth. The caller ID read, "School." She answered, "Yes?" "Where are you?" He sounded tense, and she thought of all the hidden dangers that came from screwing a stranger she'd met in a bar. Incurable venereal disease, a jealous wife, a murderous baby mama, an obnoxious Alabama affiliation. She said, "I'm in front of Pink's office." "Turn around and take your second right." "Yep." Charlie ended the call. She felt herself wanting to puzzle out his tone of voice, but then she told herself that it didn't matter because she was never going to see him again. She walked back the way she'd come, her sneakers squeaking on the waxed floor as she made her way down the dark hallway. She heard a snap behind her. The lights had come on in the front office. A hunched old woman who looked suspiciously like the ghost of Mrs. Jenkins shuffled her way behind the counter. Somewhere in the distance, heavy metal doors opened and closed. The beep whir of the metal detectors swirled into her ears. Someone jangled a set of keys. The air seemed to contract with each new sound, as if the school was bracing itself for the morning onslaught. Charlie looked at the large clock on the wall. If the schedule was still the same, the first homeroom bell would ring soon, and the kids who had been dropped off early and warehoused in the cafeteria would flood the building. Charlie had been one of those kids. For a long time, whenever she thought of her father, her mind conjured up the scene of his arm leaning out of the Chevette's window, freshly lit cigarette between his fingers, as he pulled out of the school parking lot. She stopped walking. The room numbers finally caught her attention, and she knew immediately where she was. Charlie touched her fingers to a closed wooden door. Room 3, her safe haven. Miss Beavers had retired eons ago, but the old woman's voice echoed in Charlie's ears. "They'll only get your goat if you show them where you keep your hay." Charlie still didn't know what that meant, exactly. You could extrapolate that it had something to do with the extended Culpepper clan, who had bullied Charlie relentlessly when she'd finally returned to school. Or you could take it that, as a girls' basketball coach named Etta Beavers,
The teacher knew what it felt like to be taunted. There was no one who could give Charlie advice on how to handle the present situation. For the first time since college, she'd had a one-night stand. Or a one-night sit, if it boiled down to the exact position. Charlie wasn't the type of person who did that sort of thing. She didn't go to bars. She didn't drink to excess. She didn't really make hugely regrettable mistakes. At least, not until recently. Her life had started to unspool back in August of last year. Charlie had spent almost every waking hour since then raveling out mistake after mistake. Apparently, the new month of May was not going to see any improvement. The blunders were now starting before she even got out of bed. This morning, she'd been wide awake on her back, staring up at the ceiling, trying to convince herself that what had happened last night had not happened at all, when an unfamiliar ringtone had come from her purse. She had answered because wrapping the phone in aluminum foil, throwing it into the dumpster behind her office, and buying a new phone that would restore from her old phone backup did not occur to her until after she had said hello. The short conversation that followed was of the kind you would expect between two total strangers. "Hello, person whose name I must have asked for but now can't recall. I believe I have your phone." Charlie had offered to meet the man at his work because she didn't want him to know where she lived, or worked, or what kind of car she drove. Between his pickup truck and his admittedly exquisite body, she'd thought he'd tell her he was a mechanic or a farmer. Then he'd said that he was a teacher, and she'd instantly flashed up a Dead Poet Society kind of thing. Then he'd said he taught middle school, and she'd jumped to the unfounded conclusion that he was a pedophile. "Here." He stood outside an open door at the far end of the hall. As if on cue, the overhead fluorescence popped on, bathing Charlie in the most unflattering light possible. She instantly regretted her choice of ratty jeans and a faded, long-sleeved Duke Blue Devils basketball T-shirt. "Good Lord God," Charlie muttered. "No such problems at the end of the hall." Mr. I Can't Remember Your Name was even more attractive than she remembered. The standard button-down with khakis uniform of a middle school teacher couldn't hide the fact that he had muscles and places that men in their 40s had generally replaced with beer and fried meat. His scraggly beard was more of a 5 o'clock shadow. The gray at his temples gave him a wizened air of mystery. He had one of those dimples in his chin that you could use to open a bottle. This was not the type of man Charlie dated. This was the exact type of man that she studiously avoided. He felt too coiled, too strong, too unknowable. It was like playing with a loaded gun. "This is me." He pointed to the bulletin board outside his room. Small handprints were traced onto white butcher paper. Purple cut-out letters read, "Mr. Huckleberry." "Huckleberry?" Charlie asked.
"It's Huckabee, actually."
He held out his hand.
"Huck."
Charlie shook his hand, too late realizing that he was asking for his iPhone. "Sorry." She handed him the phone. He gave her a crooked smile that had probably sent many a young girl into puberty.
"Yours is in here."
Charlie followed him into the classroom. The walls were adorned with maps, which made sense because he was apparently a history teacher. At least if you believed the sign that said, "Mr. Huckleberry loves world history." She said, "I may be a little sketchy on last night, but I thought you said you were a Marine."
"Not anymore, but it sounds sexier than middle school teacher."
He gave a self-deprecating laugh.
"Joined up when I was 17. Took my retirement 6 years ago."
He leaned against his desk.
"I was looking for a way to keep serving, so I got my master's on a GI Bill, and here we are."
"I bet you get a lot of tear-stained cards on Valentine's Day." Charlie would have failed history every single day of her life if her teacher had looked like Mr. Huckleberry. He asked,
"Do you have kids?"
"Not that I know of."
Charlie didn't return the question. She assumed that someone with kids wouldn't use a photo of his dog as his screensaver. You married?
He shook his head. Didn't suit me.
It suited me, she explained. We've been officially separated for 9 months.
Did you cheat on him?
You'd think so, but no. Charlie ran her finger along the books on the shelf by his desk. Homer, Euripides, Voltaire, Bronte. You don't strike me as the Wuthering Heights type.
He grinned. Not much talking in the truck.
Charlie started to return the grin, but regret pulled down the corners of her mouth. In some ways, this easy, flirty banter felt like more of a transgression than the physical act of sex. She bantered with her husband. She asked inane questions of her husband. And last night, for the first time in her married life, she had cheated on her husband.
Huck seemed to sense her mood shift. It's obviously none of my business, but he's nuts for letting you go.
I'm a lot of work. Charlie studied one of the maps. There were blue pins in most of Europe and some of the Middle East. You go to all of these places? He nodded, but didn't elaborate. Marines, she said. Were you a Navy SEAL?
Marines can be SEALs, but not all SEALs are Marines.
Charlie was about to tell him that he hadn't answered the question, but Huck spoke first.
Your phone started ringing at O Dark 30.
Her heart flipped in her chest. You didn't answer?
Nah. It's much more fun trying to figure you out from your caller ID.
He pushed himself up on the desk.
B2 called around 5 this morning. I'm assuming that's your hookup at the vitamin shop.
Charlie's heart flipped again. That's Riboflavin, my spin class instructor. He narrowed his eyes, but he didn't push her.
The next call came at approximately 5:15. Someone who showed up as Daddy, who I deduce by the lack of the word sugar in front of the name, is your father.
She nodded, even as her mother's voice silently stressed that it was whom. Any other clues? He pretended to stroke a long beard.
Beginning around 5:30, you got a series of calls from the county jail, at least 6, spaced out about 5 minutes apart.
You got me, Nancy Drew. Charlie held up her hands in surrender. I'm a drug trafficker. Some of my mules got picked up over the weekend. He laughed.
I'm halfway believing you.
I'm a defense lawyer, she admitted. Usually people are more receptive to drug trafficker. Huck stopped laughing. His eyes narrowed again, but the playfulness had evaporated.
What's your name?
Charlie Quinn. She could have sworn he flinched. She asked, Is there a problem? His jaw was clenched so hard the bone jutted out.
That's not the name on your credit card.
Charlie paused because there was a lot wrong with that statement. That's my married name. Why were you looking at my credit card?
I wasn't looking. I glanced at it when you put it down on the bar.
He stood up from the desk.
I should get ready for school.
Was it something I said? She was trying to make a joke out of it because of course it was something she'd said. Look, everybody hates lawyers until they need one.
I grew up in Pikeville.
You're saying that like it's an explanation. He opened and closed the desk drawers.
Homeroom's about to start. I need to do my first period prep.
Charlie crossed her arms. This wasn't the first time she'd had this conversation with longtime Pikeville residents. There's 2 reasons for you to be acting like you're acting. He ignored her, opening and closing another drawer. She counted out the possibilities on her fingers. Either you hate my father, which is okay because a lot of people hate him, or... She held up her finger for the more likely excuse, the one that had put a target on Charlie's back 28 years ago when she'd returned to school. The one that still got her nasty looks in town from the people who supported the extended... inbred Culpepper clan. You think I'm a spoiled little bitch who helped frame Zachariah Culpepper and his innocent baby brother so my dad could get his hands on some pissant life insurance policy and their shitty little trailer. which he never did, by the way. He could have sued them for the 20 grand they owed in legal bills, but he didn't. Not to mention, I could pick those fuckers out of a lineup with my eyes closed. He was shaking his head before she even finished.
None of those things.
Really?
She had pegged him for a Culpepper truther when he told her that he'd grown up in Pikeville.
On the other hand, Charlie could see a career Marine hating Rusty's kind of lawyering right up until that Marine got caught with a little too much oxy or a lot too much hooker. As her father always said, a Democrat is a Republican who's been through the criminal justice system. She told Huck,
"Look, I love my dad, but I don't practice the same kind of law that he does. Half my caseload is in the juvenile court, the other half is in drug court. I work with stupid people who do stupid things, who need a lawyer to keep the prosecutor from overcharging them." She held out her hands in a shrug. "I just level the playing field." Huck glared at her. His initial anger had escalated to furious in the blink of an eye.
"I want you to leave my room. Right now."
His hard tone made Charlie take a step back. For the first time, it occurred to her that no one knew she was at the school, and that Mr. Huckleberry could probably break her neck with one hand. "Fine." She snatched her phone off his desk and started toward the door. Even as Charlie was telling herself she should shut up and go, she swung back around. "What did my father ever do to you?" Huck didn't answer. He was sitting at his desk, head bent over a stack of papers, red ink pen in hand. Charlie waited. He tapped the pen on his desk, a drumbeat of a dismissal. She was about to tell him where to stick the pen when she heard a loud crack echo down the hallway. Three more cracks followed in quick succession. Not a car backfiring. Not fireworks. A person who has been up close when a gun is fired into another human being never mistakes the sound of a gunshot for something else. Charlie was yanked down to the floor. Huck threw her behind a filing cabinet, shielding her body with his own. He said something. She saw his mouth move, but the only sound she could hear was the gunshots echoing inside her head. Four shots, each a distinctive, terrifying echo to the past. Just like before, her mouth went dry. Just like before, her heart stopped beating. Her throat closed, her vision tunneled, everything looked small, narrowed to a single, tiny point. Huck's voice rushed back in. "Active shooter at the middle school," he whispered calmly into his phone. "Sounds like he's near the principal's. Another crack. Another bullet fired, then another. Then the homeroom bell rang."
"Jesus," Huck said. "There's at least 50 kids in the cafeteria. I have to..."
A blood-curdling scream broke off the rest of his words.
"Help!"
a woman yelled.
"Please, help us!"
Charlie blinked. Gamma's chest exploding. She blinked again. Blood misting from Sam's head.
"Charlie, run!"
She was out the door before Huck could stop her. Her legs pistoned, her heart pounded. Her sneakers gripped the waxy floor, but in her mind she could feel the earth moving against her bare feet, tree limbs slicing into her face, fear cinching a length of barbed wire around her chest.
"Help us!"
the woman cried.
"Please!"
Huck caught up with Charlie as she rounded the corner. He was nothing more than a blur as her vision tunneled again, this time to the three people at the end of the hallway. A man's feet pointed up at the ceiling. Behind him, to his right, a smaller set of feet splayed out. Pink shoes. White stars on the soles. Lights that would flash when she walked. An older woman knelt beside the little girl, rocking back and forth, wailing. Charlie wanted to wail, too. Blood had sprayed the plastic chairs outside the office, splattered onto the walls and ceiling, jetted onto the floors. There was a familiarity to the carnage that spread a numbness through Charlie's body. She slowed to a jog. Then a brisk walk. She had seen this before. She knew that you could put it all in a little box and close it up later.
that you could go on with your life if you didn't sleep too much, didn't breathe too much, didn't live too much, so that death came back and snatched you away for the taking. Somewhere, a set of doors banged open. Loud footsteps clumped through the hallways. Voices were raised. Screaming. Crying. Words were being shouted, but they were unintelligible to Charlie. She was underwater. Her body moved slowly, arms and legs floating against an exaggerated gravity. Her brain silently cataloged all of the things that she did not want to see. Mr. Pinkman was on his back. His blue tie was tossed over his shoulder. Blood mushroomed from the center of his white dress shirt. The left side of his head was open, skin hanging like tattered paper around the white of his skull. There was a deep, black hole where his right eye should have been. Mrs. Pinkman was not beside her husband. She was the screaming woman who had suddenly stopped screaming. She was cradling the child's head in her lap. Holding a pastel blue sweater to the girl's neck, the bullet had ripped open something vital. Mrs. Pinkman's hands were bright red. Blood had turned the diamond on her wedding ring the color of a cherry pit. Charlie's knees gave out. She was on the floor beside the girl. She was seeing herself lying on the ground in the forest, 12, 13. Spindly little legs. Short black hair like Gamma. Long eyelashes like Sam.
"Help!"
Mrs. Pinkman whispered, her voice hoarse.
"Please!"
Charlie reached out her hands, not knowing where to put them. The little girl's eyes rolled up, then just as suddenly, she focused on Charlie.
"It's okay," Charlie told her. "You'll be okay. Go before this lamb, O Lord," Mrs. Pinkman prayed. "Be not far from her. Make haste to help her." "You won't die," Charlie's brain begged. "You won't surrender. You will graduate high school. You will go to college. You will get married. You will not leave a gaping hole in your family where your love used to be. Make haste to guide me, O Lord, my salvation." "Look at me," Charlie told the girl. "You're going to be fine." The girl was not going to be fine. Her eyelids began to flutter. Her blue-tinged lips parted. Tiny teeth. White gums. The light pink tip of her tongue. Slowly, the color began to drain from her face. Charlie was reminded of the way winter came down the mountain. The festive red and orange and yellow leaves turning umber, then brown, then starting to fall, so that by the time the cold reached its icy fingers into the foothills outside of town, everything was dead. "Oh, God!"
Mrs. Pinkman sobbed.
"Little angel! Poor little angel!"
Charlie couldn't remember taking the child's hand. But there were her little fingers caught between Charlie's bigger ones. So small and cold, like a lost glove on the playground. Charlie watched the finger slowly release until the girl's hand fell slack to the floor. Gone.
"Code Black!"
Charlie jerked at the sound.
"Code Black!"
A cop was running up the hallway. He had his radio in one hand, a shotgun in the other. Panic cracked his voice.
"Get to the school! Get to the school!"
For a brief second, the man made eye contact with Charlie. There was a spark of recognition, and then he saw the body of the dead child. Horror, then grief, collapsed his features. The toe of his shoe caught a streak of blood. His feet slipped out from underneath him. He fell hard to the ground, his breath oofed out of his open mouth. The shotgun flew from his hand and skittered across the floor. Charlie looked down at her own hand, the one that held the child's. She rubbed together her fingers. The blood was sticky, not like Gamma's, which had felt slick like oil. Bright white bone, pieces of heart and lung, cords of tendon and arteries and veins, and life spilling out of her gaping wounds. She remembered going back to the farmhouse after it was all over. Rusty had hired someone to clean, but they hadn't done a thorough job. Months later, Charlie was looking for a bowl at the back of one of the cabinets, and she'd found a piece of Gamma's tooth.
"Don't!"
Huck yelled. Charlie looked up, shocked by what she saw, what she had missed, what at first she couldn't comprehend even though it was taking place less than 50 feet in front of her. A teenage girl was sitting on the floor, her back to the lockers. Charlie's brain flashed up an image from before, the girl sneaking into the edge of her tunnel vision as Charlie ran up the hallway toward the carnage. Charlie had instantly recognized the girl's type. Black clothes. Black eyeliner. A goth. No blood. Round face showing shock, not pain. She's okay, Charlie had thought, running past her to reach Mrs. Pinkman, to reach the child. But the goth girl wasn't okay. She was the shooter. She had a revolver in her hand. Instead of picking off more victims, she was pointing the gun at her own chest.
"Put it down!"
The cop was standing a few yards away, his shotgun jammed into his shoulder. Terror informed his every movement, from the way he was bouncing on the balls of his feet to the death grip he had on the weapon.
"I said put it the fuck down!"
"She will." Huck knelt with his back to the girl, shielding her. His hands were up, his voice was steady.
"It's okay, officer, let's stay calm here."
"Get out of my way!"
The cop wasn't calm. He was amped up, ready to pull the trigger the moment he got a clean shot.
"Get the fuck out of my way!"
"Her name is Kelly," Huck said. "Kelly Wilson."
"Fucking move, asshole!"
Charlie didn't watch the men. She watched the weapons. Revolver and shotgun. Shotgun and revolver. She felt a wave pass through her body, the same kind of anesthesia that had numbed her so many times before.
"Move!"
the cop screamed. He jerked the shotgun one way, then the other, trying to angle around Huck.
"Get the fuck out of my way!"
"No." Huck stayed on his knees, his back to Kelly, his hands stayed in the air. "Don't do this, man. She's only 16 years old. You don't want to kill a..."
"Move out of my way!"
The cop's fear was like an electric current crackling the air.
"Get on the floor!"
"Stop it, man."
Huck moved with the shotgun blocking him at every point.
"She's not trying to shoot anybody but herself."
The girl's mouth opened. Charlie couldn't hear the words, but the cop obviously did.
"Did you hear that fucking bitch?"
the cop screamed.
"Let her do it or get the fuck out of my way!"
"Please," Mrs. Pinkman whispered. Charlie had almost forgotten about the woman. The principal's wife had her head in her hands, her eyes covered so she didn't have to see.
"Please stop."
"Kelly?"
Huck's voice was calm. He reached his hand over his shoulder, palm up.
"Kelly, give me the gun, sweetheart. You don't have to do this."
He waited a few seconds, then said,
"Kelly, look at me."
Slowly the girl looked up. Her mouth was slack, her eyes were glassy.
"Front hallway, front hallway!"
Another cop rushed past Charlie. He went down on one knee, sliding across the floor, two-handing his Glock and screaming,
"Put it down!"
"Please, God!"
Mrs. Pinkman sobbed into her hands.
"Forgive this sin."
"Kelly," Huck said, "hand me the gun. Nobody else has to get hurt."
"Down!"
The second cop boomed. Hysteria pitched his voice up too high. Charlie could see his finger tense on the trigger.
"Get down on the ground!"
"Kelly," Huck made his voice firm like an angry parent. "I'm not asking anymore. Give me the gun right now."
He shook his open hand in the air for emphasis.
"I mean it."
Kelly Wilson began to nod. Charlie watched the teenager's eyes gradually come back into focus as Huck's words started to penetrate. Someone was telling her what to do, showing her a way out of this. Her shoulders relaxed, her mouth closed.
She blinked several times. Charlie intrinsically understood what the girl was going through. Time had stopped, and then someone, somehow, had found a key to wind it back up again. Slowly, Kelly moved to put the revolver in Huck's hand. The cop pulled the trigger anyway. Chapter 2. Charlie watched Huck's left shoulder jerk as the bullet ripped through his arm. His nostrils flared, his lips parted for breath. Blood wicked into the fibers of his shirt like a red iris. Still, he held on to the revolver that Kelly had placed in his hand. Someone whispered, "Jesus Christ."
"I'm all right," Huck told the cop who had shot him. "You can holster your weapon, okay?"
The cop's hand shook so hard that he could barely hold on to his gun. Huck said,
"Officer Rogers, holster your weapon and take this revolver."
Charlie felt, rather than saw, a swarm of police officers run past her. The air billowed around them like the cartoon swirls that came out of clouds, nothing more than thin, curved lines that indicated movement. Then a paramedic was holding tightly to Charlie's arm. Then someone was shining a flashlight into her eyes, asking if she was hurt, if she was in shock, if she wanted to go to the hospital. "No," Mrs. Pinkman said. Another paramedic was checking her for injuries. Her red shirt was soaked with blood. "Please, I'm fine." No one was checking on Mr. Pinkman. No one was checking on the little girl. Charlie looked down at her hands. The bones inside the tips of her fingers were vibrating. The sensation slowly spread until she felt like she was standing an inch outside of her body, that every breath was a reverberation of another breath she had previously taken. Mrs. Pinkman cupped her hand to Charlie's cheek. She used her thumb to wipe away tears. Pain was etched into the deep wrinkles lining the woman's face. With anyone else, Charlie would have pulled away. But she leaned into Mrs. Pinkman's warmth. They had been here before. 28 years ago, Mrs. Pinkman was Miss Heller, living with her parents 2 miles away from the farmhouse. She was the one who'd answered the tentative knock at her door and found 13-year-old Charlie standing on the front porch, covered in sweat, streaked with blood, asking if they had any ice cream. That was what people focused on when they told the story. Not that Gamma had been murdered or that Sam had been buried alive, but that Charlie had eaten 2 bowls of ice cream before she told Miss Heller that something bad had happened. "Charlotte." Huck grabbed her shoulder. She watched his mouth move as he repeated the name that wasn't her name anymore. His tie was undone. She saw the red splotches dotting the white bandage around his arm. "Charlotte." He shook her again.
"You need to call your dad. Now."
Charlie looked up, looked around. Time had moved on without her. Mrs. Pinkman was gone. The paramedics had disappeared. The only thing that remained the same was the bodies. They were still there, just a few feet away. Mr. Pinkman with his tie over his shoulder, the little girl with her pink jacket that was stained with blood.
"Call him," Huck said.
Charlie fumbled for the phone in her back pocket. He was right. Rusty would be worried. She needed to let him know that she was okay. Huck said,
"Tell him to bring the newspapers, the chief of police, whoever he can get down here."
He looked away.
"I can't stop them on my own."
Charlie felt a tightness in her chest, her body telling her that she was trapped inside something dangerous. She followed Huck's gaze down the hallway. He wasn't worried about Charlie. He was worried about Kelly Wilson. The teenager was face down on the floor, both arms handcuffed tightly behind her back. She was petite, no more than Charlie's size, but she was pinned down the same as if she were a violent con. One cop had his knee pressed into her back, another kneeled on her legs, and yet another was grinding the sole of his boot into the side of the girl's face. These actions alone could be seen through the wide lens of admissible restraint. But that's not why Huck had told her to call Rusty. 5 more cops stood in a circle around the girl. She hadn't heard them before, but she could hear them clearly now. They were screaming,
cursing, waving their arms around. Charlie knew some of these men, recognized them from high school or the courtroom,